Night Talk, Monday to Thursdays, 10 to midnight.
It is Night Talk and you are welcome. Bertha with you right up until 12 midnight. The autism community in South Africa is a small one, but it is often described as overlooked, even though autism is currently estimated to affect 2% of the South African population. As a result, those with autism and other sensory and developmental disabilities suffer the exclusion of not being accommodated for their special needs in many, many public spaces and the education sector. Most of the times you find that people discover that their child is autistic maybe when they're three. If they're three, you're lucky. Some even pick it up when your child is about six and they have learning challenges and you start trying to figure out what exactly is happening and trying to identify educational spaces where you can take your child. But we thought because it was Autism Day yesterday, it's important to make everybody aware or sing like canaries in that regard so that whoever has a child that is challenged in that manner can have some form of understanding, as well as, you know, trying to find space where you can take your child. And to start this conversation this evening, I've got Priscilla Davis, child and adolescent neurodevelopment specialist, a clinician, chatting to us. Good evening and welcome to Night Talk.
Hi, good evening.
Let's start by breaking down what autism is. What is autism?
So I suppose if you looked at it from a sort of medical perspective, you'd sort of describe it as a developmental difficulty, and it's around differences in the brain. So some people or individuals with autism have known difference, which is such as a genetic condition. Other causes are not yet known. Some scientists believe that there are multiple causes of autism that act together to change the most common ways people develop. If you were to kind of put it more simply, you know, individuals with autism, you could say that they're neurodivergent individuals who process the world differently to most individuals. So that's sort of in a nutshell. You could have it from a medical perspective, or you could have it in a simplified format, which is you're looking at a condition which is a spectrum disorder, meaning it is, you know, sort of widely varying. Not every individual is the same. Not every presentation is the same. And not every sort of set of difficulties becomes the same as a result. So that's how you sort of look at it. It's a developmental difficulty and it's caused by a difference in the brain and how people process and interpret information. And it's mainly around social communication difficulties, and then there are other sort of range of difficulties associated with it as well.
What are some of the gender nuances in young people?
So I think most commonly what's coming up a lot is when you look at males and females. So males, you may have a more overt presentation sometimes where it's easily noticeable and there's an early detection diagnosis and a lot of support that can be put in place for that individual from a young age. A lot of research is suggesting that a lot of females do enter diagnosis much later, and partly usually because they say that with females, it can be more of an internal presentation, thereby meaning that an individual can go through life having the same challenges around social communication, interaction, and how they process and learn. But they sort of, if you like, there's a term they use, which is around masking. So there's an ability to mimic what social norms should be. There's an ability to mimic certain things, but not necessarily being able to engage socially, not necessarily being able to process information the way that, you know, it is being perceived. So they sort of use a term around that females sometimes mask or are able to mask for whatever reason for much longer, so detection is delayed, but it doesn't sort of take away from the fact that the challenges present from a very sort of early onset. So those are some of the differences that you may find. The population of males is easily detectable in some cases, the presentation more overt, the behavior is easier to pick up, maybe versus a female.
And what about the comorbidities in autism in young people?
So around sort of the comorbidities, you're looking at, so a lot of research again, this, and I think it's quite, as you've sort of pointed out, an area that's kind of overlooked. So you may find that where an individual may have autism, and because it's a wide spectrum, someone may have challenges with their learning. someone may not have challenges with their learning. They may actually be academically high achieving. Then someone may have mainly challenges with social communication, interaction, emotional ability, processing information at an emotionally appropriate age. Some people may have other sort of nuances. So you may have an element of inattention, hyperactivity, impulsivity. Some may have things such as dyslexia, which is around your learning and understanding. Some may have dysgraphia, and dyspraxia. So in most cases, you'd find that it's never just one simple way of understanding. And I think that's maybe been the problem at times, where it is being understood to be maybe a difficulty with social communication. Therefore, when you have a high-functioning individual, they're kind of excluded, or their needs are not properly met because it's assumed that they've got a high IQ, they're doing well academically, therefore socially, emotionally, and processing and sensory-wise, they're also doing okay. So those are some of those challenges.
Let's talk about the risk to self. How does this work?
So if you're talking about the risk to self, you can sort of give, I always give an example of nature versus nurture. So when you have an individual, or if you're looking at a child with autism, the risk would be that if their needs are not understood quite early on, the learning experience can be quite detrimental, can be quite challenging. And in most cases, some individuals may then go into the learning environment and actually experience things such as depression, anxiety, simply because some of their needs are not being met. So, i.e., you may have an individual in a learning environment, but because they cannot really cope maybe with a large classroom or a large setting, they then struggle and they don't actually grasp the concepts of learning, and therefore they end up falling behind. And in falling behind, you start to have those challenges with anxiety, with low mood, with not really enjoying the learning experience. So I suppose the risk of not identifying it, or the risk of identifying and not really putting things in place, leave somebody quite vulnerable, and it can be very progressive to the point of, if things are not being dealt with, support is not being appropriately put in place, every aspect of your life therefore then suffers, which offsets other different challenges and difficulties as someone transitions into adulthood.
Often we hear sensory difficulties in autism. What is this?
So when you're looking at sensory difficulties, again, no individual is the same. And I think sometimes there's been sort of a use of one simple way of understanding. Sensory may range from, other people may have sensitivities to loud noises and loud spaces. Some individuals, it can be texture. So it can be texture of clothing. Some people, it may be textures of food. Some people, it may just be the concept of having multiple instructions or multiple sort of activities that they have to kind of organize themselves through. So some people sort of talk about experiencing sometimes a sensory overload, and that can be very different to each individual, depending where they are, depending how they're also raised and how they're nurtured and how their needs are understood from a home perspective, through to the learning environment, or even through to the working environment. So sensory is just sensitivities around a variation of sort of sensory triggering things. So it can be sounds, it can be textures, it can be sizes of rooms, it can just be the way that a space is laid out.
I also have Matau Andronica Ramaphosa, who is CEO and founder of Mowepi Publishing, educator and children's book author, and her daughter has autism, joining us online. Matau, good evening and welcome to Night Talk.
Good evening and thank you for having me.
Putting things into perspective, you have a child that has autism. Mm-hmm. And when your child was diagnosed, at what age, how did you know? What happened?
I think early on, between the ages of 2 and 5, it wasn't a particular Friday. I went to fetch my daughter from cash, and I saw her sitting in the corner, and she was sitting alone. And by then, she had already had... no sign of ever speaking because she was still in baby languages. She was still doing the dada and she was still wearing an earpiece. So that was a sign for me, and I started reading about it immediately because that was a concern for me as a parent because I saw the sign.
So after noticing, what steps did you take? Did you take any steps?
Yes, I did. Immediately, we went for audio, a test. We went to the UP, University of Pretoria, and we did the audiology test, and then we also saw an occupational therapist, and they recommended us taking her to a child psychiatrist. And we went to the first child psychiatrist, and he immediately said, high on the spectrum, sensories will never be stimulated. Just forget about your child. She'll never lead a normal life. But I needed a second opinion. I went and I saw another child psychiatrist, and he gave me hope that, you know what, she has ADHD and autism. So, but then let's get her immediately on therapy. We started with the occupational, the speech, and behavioral therapy.
And support at home. You know, hearing that your child has this condition as a parent sometimes can really throw you off, because your way of communicating at some point has to alter or has to change. Did you change the way you communicate, or you continued the way you were before? And how did your child respond to your way of communicating after hearing the news?
Honestly speaking, I took it one day at a time. It wasn't something that I was familiar with. So I didn't want to get overwhelmed, because I have a child that needs me more than my feeling at that moment. I remember just praying once and saying, God, give me the strength. Whatever it is, I'm going to deal with it. And from then, I took advice from the therapist, and I made sure that I abided by what the advice that I was given, because I didn't know about autism and ADHD. Hence, I started learning about it, about the sensory sensitivity when we go to a restaurant and she gets overstimulated and you see her crying. And people are just staring and thinking the child is just misbehaving. So how do I deal with those? So for me, it was more of a learning experience. And I looked for small signs. I remember when I was putting her in the car and she started humming Rihanna. That was my first sign that my child is responding to therapy. So all of those became sort of things that I actually, when I saw the signs that she was improving, that gave me hope. So for me, honestly speaking, I also went to therapy, because there's no way you can deal with such a diagnosis of something that is still limited in information that you can cope about.
Do you think we have enough facilities for autism in this country, or you struggle to find a facility to take your child?
Honestly speaking, there is individual and silos, and government does provide schools, special needs schools, but it's all around, like it's for everybody. It's not for autism only. But at the same time, I don't believe that we should be putting our kids who are highly diagnosed with autism in special schools only. I believe that they should be going to special schools and they're then be integrated into society, because they will lead a normal life. And eventually, they will be on their own. So for me, honestly speaking, I do believe that we could do more. It could be all an integrated, we need an integrated center where it's a one-stop shop where we can all get this information. Because, for instance, for HIV, we know where to get the HIV tests and everything. But for autism, the information is you can go to a neurologist, you can go to a psychiatrist. We're not sure about the information. So there needs to be more that is put into a center for autism and ADHD and dyslexia, because all of those are on the spectrum. And we need to deal with the spectrum as a holistic a thing. I don't know if it's, yeah.
That's perfectly fine. Just hold on for me. I want to come back to Priscilla, because when you are identifying or finding the symptoms, is there something that's outstanding? And age-wise, do you pick it up from, let's say, 1 to 5, 1 to 12, or it's something that can just crop up even as an adult?
I think in terms of diagnosis, I would say that, you know, sort of as a parent highlighted, that it's about looking at the developmental milestones of your child. But then again, that varies from parent to parent in knowledge. So, for example, if you've got maybe a first-time parent, maybe not very knowledgeable on sort of different things medically, it may be harder to identify. So to another parent, when their child, you know, seems to cry quite a lot or seems to find crowds overwhelming or seems to find going to certain places a bit of a challenge, they can be that kind of label, and you can have that kind of belief that, well, you know, maybe my child's just quite difficult when we go to the malls and my child is not for malls. But then you may have another parent or another individual may look at it and think, actually, what is it that is challenging? What is it that is triggering sort of some of what they would maybe describe in some instances as sensory overload or a meltdown? So I think in terms of when you can have it from a very young age. When it's diagnosed is really sometimes around how much is being understood and how much is detected, and also sometimes the level of, you know, sort of how disabling is it. And because it's a very wide spectrum, you can have someone very highly functioning, go through school quite well, go through working life quite well, and then there might just be an incident that happens in adulthood. You know, I've worked with parents who bring their children for assessments, and then a few weeks or a few months down the line, they actually tell me themselves that they actually started going through the assessment for themselves because they started to identify from that process some similarities. So which would then sort of kind of lead you to this belief that it's not so much that which age can you detect it, it's really around when you do notice some of these challenges and how maybe disabling those challenges can be. Some people never get diagnosed, but they have the traits and they're quite highly functioning and it's not very disabling. Some people have a broad spectrum of challenges that will lead the schooling environment to be challenging, working environment to be challenging, even sort of relationships with people to be quite challenging. So I think the answer to that is early detection is possible in some cases, and people may have it from a very young age. And most people do have the traits from a young age, but how disabling it is and how compromising it can be is probably what determines the point, the pivotal point that you do seek help for your child, or you do seek help maybe when you hit university, or you do seek help when you sort of start to experience difficulties in your working life.
I'm speaking to Priscilla Davis, child and adolescent neurodevelopment specialist clinician, and talking about autism. World Autism Day was on the 2nd of April, 2024. And also on the line, I've got Matau Andronika Ramapuputla, CEO and founder of Mowepi Publishing, educator and children's book author, and her daughter has autism. Now, in wrapping up, let me come to you, Matau. Chances are you did a lot of research after finding out the condition of your baby. And in terms of public schools, did you find quite a number of public schools? Are there any suggestions in case someone is listening to our conversation and they are investigating schools that offer services that, you know, can take care of such challenges?
Okay. The number of schools, for instance, in Mamelodi, we have a school for special needs, specialized for all the special needs. They include all the special needs that are identified within the community, and the children are taken there. But there's one that comes into mind is UNITAS. I think that is in the Pretoria East. So I'm in Pretoria. So, and the Department of Education does have a list of special needs schools that you can actually just go and Google under the DBE when you're looking for a school. In my case, in particular, Batobela did go to a private settings of schools for special needs. But like right now, she has been integrated into normal schooling. She insists on that because she went through special needs schools through from grade 0 till grade 7. And now I'm taking her to an all-girl school. I must say she's in high school. Her speech has improved. But I must say, because we're running off, it's because of the early speech therapy that she went through, because she started with speech therapy when she was 2. So she has improved a lot, and there is hope for parents with kids who are diagnosed with autism. I do believe that our kids, if we start early, we identify early, they'll be able to actually lead sort of a normal life, as we may call it. There is hope for us.
Matau, thank you so much for joining us this evening and talking about autism and making sure we make noise about World Autism Day, which was yesterday, and making a lot of people aware. Thank you so much for joining us. That's Matau Andronica Ramapuputla, CEO and founder of Mawepi Publishing, educator and children's book author, and her daughter has autism, sharing her experiences. And in wrapping up, Priscilla, do we find a lot of children being autistic in this era, unlike maybe 20, 30 years ago?
Part of it, you know, there's this ongoing debate of, have we become better than we were before at acknowledging these difficulties, or have services improved, or have the processes of assessment improved? But one key pivotal point, I think, to kind of flag, if you look in the last 4 years, I'd say, especially with the onset of COVID and post-COVID, it was detected that the numbers went up. And it's not necessarily that more individuals or more young people or more children were experiencing these challenges, but I think the environment during that particular period in the last 3-4 years, because of the way the world changed and how we do things changed and routines changed, a lot of young people, especially with the schooling system where you have a lockdown, where you have closing down of somebody's daily routine, they saw that a lot of individuals who previously didn't seem to present so overtly with the traits started to experience challenges. So thereby, the traits became more visible. So in a way, it was a positive that those people who were diagnosed started to have the intervention, started to have the support, started to have the right scaffolding. Therefore, they can. It gives you kind of a nicer projection, or more positive projection of what you can do in the future. So I think there's two sides to it, which is, have we become better in how we identify and diagnose? Or has the world changed so much that some of the traits are coming out more often and they're more overt than there would have been maybe in a world previously where we didn't have certain things taking place?
Priscilla, thank you so much for joining us this evening on Night Talk. That's Priscilla Davis, child and adolescent neurodevelopment specialist clinician, giving us some insight into autism. Thank you for joining us. Have yourself a pleasant evening.
Thank you so much.
Bye for now. Coming up next, opinion, studentification of Bay suburbs needs more research when we get back.